You are tuned in to Community Radio, WPVMLP, Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7, streaming online, WPVMFM.org, the voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
Welcome to the Audio Garden, where we cultivate our collective wisdom, nurture creativity, and spread love. My name is Martha Senator, and this is Listen and Be Heard. Listen and be heard because you can and must make a difference for the better in this world.
Listen and Be Heard is a radio program that's part of the Pacifica Radio Network. We focus on writers of all genres, poetry, children's, memoir, fiction, creative nonfiction. And now we're taking on a lot of other elements, addressing concerns of indigenous communities, music, and it just runs the gamut of everything that nourishes the soul. In fact, I've been involved as one of the hosts, a co-host, have some interviews coming up fairly soon in the next couple of weeks. So it's something that I really enjoy. I just got a whole lot of pleasure, and it's something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm glad that it's here.
Pasa, everybody, what is up? Hernan Ramiro over here, straight from Brooklyn, you know, formerly known as Jay Rodriguez. I hope you're enjoying the show. So much good stuff. Let's keep it going. This is WLBH. Listen and Be Heard Hour. Summer Remix.
We need to listen. And by listening, you really take in the essence of the other, and the other will understand you. So you will actually be heard. Because being heard is a function of being able to relate to the other, because the other actually is you in some way.
Floating down the aisle of the temple of the Holy Spirit of the universe, I am surrounded by the light of the knowledge of my ancestors. Pillars of books in all languages reach for the arch of the sky. Images wrought more fine than reality turn mystic keys to the doors in my eyes. Everyone I know is here. Everyone who ever held me in a trance, made me want to dance, fed my starving soul, turned a black hole into a dream. Everyone is listening. There's Duke and Monk and Bud Rapturous. Sassy Sarah is talking to Chopin. Johann is slapping Art Tatum on the back. There's Charles Dickens stroking his long gray beard and Virginia Woolf writing in her little notebook. Langston Hughes tying his shoes. Louis Latimer is floating on a pillow with Einstein. And Malcolm, Gandhi, and Leonardo are lapsing philosophically by the riverbank. Van Gogh is painting Coltrane's portrait. Everyone is listening. Listening to sweet music. Happy, pure, born from the earth and the wind and the water, living in the air we breathe. Kind of music. I climb a marble stairway to a balcony crowded, humming and joyous. Thin trails of smoke rise from the rafters. I look to see. My peers are smoking a peace pipe, and I join the sacred ceremony. I walk through a crowd of beautiful men and brave women to the very edge of the balcony, and I look down. I look so far down into emptiness, tipping dangerously over the edge, almost losing my balance. In contemplation of the whole big scary cares nothing about little old me goes on beyond the possibility of my imagination to conceive an entirely time-gobbling monster that grips this little ego in a bag of skin bones. Only the tiniest moment that can't even be seen on the scale of all time to figure out what I am here to do. Which reminds me, I have to go. I turn around and see everyone is looking at me. I realize I'm not alone. The earth is my home, after all. A single note rises sweetly above the symphony and informs my soul of joy, bitterness, hope, purity, sorrow, visions, and dreams. I leap into the air and float slowly to the ground like a leaf. I look around. Where is everyone? What was that sound?
Six, I was too young to know that segregation meant a California sharecropping camp, tar paper shacks, a step up from concentration camp barracks for Japanese American families like mine, a step up from a dust bowl tent for the one white family in the compound that kept to themselves. On the other side of the country, segregation meant an all-white Irish and Polish American neighborhood across town from where Freddie Gray would die decades later. They ate fish on Fridays, reminded themselves every Easter why they hated Jews, and beat you up for wearing orange on St. Patrick's Day. When I was six, I didn't know where Asian Americans should sit on a Baltimore bus. White faces in front, mahogany in back, us in the middle, or what the park map meant by white pool and colored pool. My child's mind imagined two pools with fountains lit up at night. The colored pool would be better. Red, yellow, and blue and green lights, not just plain white. When I was six, I didn't know that America was a celebration of carnivores, meatloaf, steak, and liver and onions. Fresh shucked oysters eaten alive with horseradish and ketchup. Soft shell crabs fried in butter and slapped between two slices of Wonder Bread. Our German landlady boiled blue crabs alive in beer at Old Bay. When they tried to get out, she pushed them back in with a wooden spoon and clapped on the lid. When she learned that the nice tenants upstairs had changed their name from Rosenberg to Ross, she made them move so her residence could remain pristine, German, Italian, and Japanese American. When I was six, I didn't know what America was.
You're listening to the Listen and Be Heard Hour for readers and writers, brought to you by the Listen and Be Heard Network and by Sound System Culture. All right.
Part of this great project. I'm all this important work, and we're all a part of it. This is important work. People together, we bring musicians together, we bring community together, we bring musicians together, we bring. We all have a voice. Done. This is part of this great project. We all have a voice. We all have a voice. Done. People together.
Visit our archives at listenandbeheard.net.
2 o'clock in Japan? 3 o'clock in Munich? No, it's 5 o'clock in Amsterdam. No, it's 7 o'clock in New York. No, yesterday? No, it's tomorrow. You know, time is a pretty important concept. Keeps us all straight and up to date. How else would we know when to meet each other? How else would we know when to stop working? How else would we get paid? But it's really just an idea, you know. Something we all get together to agree on. The only thing you can really be sure of is that you got to figure out what you're here to do and do it before you run out of time. Now, someone who really understood that concept was a cat named Albert Einstein. And he joined the planet in the year of 1879 in a little city called Ulm in Germany. And he stayed there for about a minute. His parents moved to Munich, and he didn't have much to say about it or anything else for the next 10 years. His mama did love him dearly, but she never thought he would amount to much because he was always starting all kinds of sentences and never finishing any of them. She was missing the main point with Albert, though. He just didn't want to say anything he wasn't absolutely, positively sure was true. Well, one morning, long before Albert reached 4 feet, he was lying around with a runny nose, feeling sick and looking pitiful. His dad comes along and figures he might be able to distract poor little Albert from his miseries. So he shows him a compass, a neat little device put to good, ingenious use over the years. As soon as Albert laid his eyes on that needle pointing in the same direction, no matter which way he moved the compass, he knew for sure there were unseen forces at work all around him. Albert's real bug was that he wanted to understand the big picture. That's why he hated school. They distracted him all day, loading him down with details and little pictures. By the time he was 12, he was miserable. Luckily for him, he made a new friend who was in tune to Albert's brain frequencies and laid some books on him about space and time and measurements. That was all that Einstein's mind needed. He realized right away he was going to be a physicist. But his mom and dad were struggling just to keep the rent paid. They wanted him to follow in his father's footsteps and become an electrical engineer so that he could join the family business. Well, the older he got, the more rigid school got. His mom would wake him up. Albert, dear, let's not make a fuss this morning. Now you know it's time to get to school. Oh, Mom, you mean that military camp you send me to every day? And then his dad decided to move his business to Milan in Italy. But he told Albert he had to stay in Munich and get his diploma. Well, that lasted for about 2 days, 2 hours, and 2 minutes. Albert hopped a train to Milan, the last one he figured he would ever take out of Germany. And as soon as he got there, before he even sat down to some of Mom's special recipe, he says to his dad, "Hey, Pops, could you pen a letter to the German government and tell them I'm not a citizen anymore?" Well, his mom and dad were happy to see him, but they didn't know what to do with him. Albert Einstein, a high school dropout. Well, finally, they broke it down to him that there was this technical school just a hop, skip, and a jump away on the other side of the Alps, and all he had to do to get in was pass the entrance exam. Well, the only problem was he failed it miserably. Wasn't that he was stupid. It's just he happened to be thinking what it might be like to be traveling on a light beam at the time. He didn't have any detail space left in his brain for some silly questions on an entrance exam. But he broke open a few books, and he finally aced that exam when he was 17, to be exact. And he was exactly where he wanted to be, in a nice, neat, high little city up in the Alps. Now, Zurich was a happening city in those days. All the political and science and art heads got together there to try out their ideas over coffees and croissants with the strains of violins and cellos egging them on into celestial meditations on molecules and matter. Well, Albert, he dove right into the whipped cream, and he went sailing out on the beautiful lake and wrote all his ideas down in a little notebook. But when he tried his ideas out in class, his teachers just weren't quite ready for them. You see, everyone and their grandma knew that Sir Isaac Newton had laid it down tight and upright a long time ago. There was no good reason to go messing around with his equations. But for once, Albert was thinking about details. And there was this one little detail that just kept bugging him. So he started asking all kinds of questions, and he started coming up with some of the answers, too. Well, his teachers, they didn't quite agree with him, but they couldn't disagree with him either because they didn't really understand what he was talking about. So what happened? I'll tell you what happened. They labeled him a troublemaker. Well, Albert, he was already pretty set in his ways in terms of what he had time to think about and what he didn't have time to think about. So he sent his one-man fan club around to take notes for him. And that worked pretty well till he graduated and none of his professors had anything nice to say about him to anyone who might give him a two-penny gig. So there was Albert, old enough to be expected to take care of himself. Well, he ran around and tutored some five-year-olds on their times tables. But he wasn't making enough money to put some meat on his table unless he wanted to chase down some of those mice running around in his cold little apartment. Well, his family came to the rescue one more time, luckily for Albert. They hooked him up with a clerical job at the Swiss Patent Office. And they just prayed he would kind of get his act together and be able to take care of himself for a while. Well, he got promoted a couple times. He married an old schoolmate, and before he knew it, he was working overtime to pay for the diapers and the wipies. But Albert always managed to fit in a couple hours of non-stop thinking. He bent his brain around corners. He reached beyond his five senses. And when he came back, he put all his ideas down in three little essays which were published in Duranilin Physique, this little scientific magazine, in the year of 1905. Now, all three of these papers were pushing it right to the frontiers of science, and one of them was called The Special Theory of Relativity. But nobody knew who Albert was, sitting on a mountaintop thinking about time and light and space. And no one could hardly understand it anyway, but finally one of his brain buddies picked it up, passed it to another brain buddy of his who could actually cut it up, and he passed it on to someone he could cut it up with, and they all started picking it up and putting it down and twisting it and mashing it and straightening it and trying to put it down, but they kept having to pick it up again till finally the most diligent doubting doctors of deep thought started trying to convince anyone whose ears they could bend that time is relative. But if you want to get inside Einstein's mind, you got to take the Einstein journey. I warn you, there are those who go on the journey who never return to their previous state of awareness. You've just passed through these doors into the time curve swerve chamber. Watch out for my grandfather clock over here on the left. I don't want you getting any scratches on it, but here, that's a good time to synchronize our watches. Okay, now, if you look over here, you'll see that this light beam is traveling all around the universe. And this beautiful piece of craftsmanship right here is a spaceship that's going to allow us to travel right alongside this light beam. Okay, let's not waste any precious time. Get in, fasten your seatbelts, put your seat upright because we're going to pick up speed quick. Isn't this fun? This is your captain checking in. Now, if you look out the left here, you'll see some fat-faced little kids looking at you from the windows of a Concorde. They're going very, 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 very fast. But they don't look like they're moving to you, does it? That's because we're going as fast as they are. Ooh, well, let's leave them behind to wipe their noses. I love this speed. Ooh, I just get off on this speed. Let's go faster, 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 faster. Now, like I explained to you before, Albert liked it stretching his ideas to their outer limits, and he wondered if he could travel as fast as a light beam if he could see light standing still. You want to try? Come on, then. Let's go faster. Come on. We can catch up with it if we just try a little harder. Come on. Faster. 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 Wait. Now look at your watches. See, they slowed down a little. Doesn't look like they slowed down to you. That's because your brain is slowed down, too. If we could go fast enough, you might stop thinking. Time itself might stop. What? You don't want to stop thinking. You don't want time to stop. You think it's impossible? Hit the brakes.
The principle of relativity is that if you could catch a light beam, time would stop. Everything we know, love, touch, and feel, the stars, the sun, keep burning because E equals MC squared. Huh. We were out there a little longer than we were gone. It's about time for me to be going.
An indigenous lesson that we can learn is the idea that we are not by ourselves on our own, but we are standing on the shoulders of our ancestors, that we all, no matter where we come from or what our family history might be, there are ancestors in our lines. And sometimes they're not even related by blood, but they're related by spirit, and that we can ask for help, and we can find strength and courage and wisdom by calling on those ancestors. I think that's a really important aspect of understanding how Indigenous communities operated as well, and something that we can do again.
This is Hernan Ramiro for Listen and Be Heard. And you're listening to Listen and Be Heard Hour for readers and writers.
I think that phrase is important so that because of this, again, this kind of history that I feel is so much embedded in my body, in the memories that I carry, in the memories that my work carries, that in this particular moment, I write I teach. I'm politically active in order for my stories to be listened to and to be heard. And I feel it is extremely important in this moment, while people are starving in Gaza, that other stories like those from Gaza, and like those stories that I tend to write about and that I've researched in my own work, needed to be heard as well. But this is the most important act, I think, for an artist to do at this moment.
The Listen and Be Heard Hour, you can find our reading list of every book that we've ever mentioned on this podcast at listenandbeheard.net.
For Al Robles. I had felt them too, the water buffalo. They come from far, unlighted fields. They lead us out of our city streets into the sleeping blue of water, all of us crossing together. Inside their curved horns, voices whisper us back from our wanderings. On Kearney Street, we are far from the lettuce fields, the cockfights, the blood of the pig. And still farther, trapped in memory, comes the arrival of workers' boats, of cane fields waking in the arms of dark men. I had not always known their tender presence. In this city cradled by two bridges, the old ones disguised as dog spirits lick the bones we leave for the dead. The wind spins us in this ordinary world until someone nearly broken with desire to be lifted to another country in his heart remembers the feel of the animal's black hair, the slow but powerful Carabao walk. In the dark, they chase us into dream, into what voices that bathe in the blue night, like the blue awakening of fish.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour.
Under the rubble, she slept on her bed, never woke up again. Her bed has become her grave, a tomb beneath the ceiling of her room, the ceiling a cenotaph. No name, no year of birth, no year of death, no epitaph. only blood and a smashed picture frame in ruin next to her. In Jabalia camp, a mother collects her daughter's flesh in a piggy bank, hoping to buy her a plot on a river in a faraway land. A group of mute people were talking sign. When a bomb fell, they fell silent. It rained again last night. The new plant locked for an umbrella in the garage. The bombing got intense, and our house looked for a shelter in the neighborhood. I leave the door to my room open so the words in my books, the titles and names of authors and publishers could flee when they hear the bombs. I became homeless once, but the rubble of my city covered the streets. They could not find a stretcher to carry your body. They put you on a wooden door they found under the rubble. Your neighbors, a moving wall. The scars on our children's faces will look for you. Our children's amputated legs will run after you. He left the house to buy some bread for his kids. News of his death made it home, but not the bread. No bread. Death sits to eat whoever remains of the kids. No need for a table. No need for bread. A father wakes up at night, sees the random colors on the walls drawn by his four-year-old daughter. The colors are about 4 feet high. Next year they would be five. But the painter has died in an airstrike. There are no colors anymore. There are no walls. I changed the order of my books on the shelves. 2 days later, the war broke out. Beware of changing the order of your books. What are you thinking? What thinking? What you? You? Is there still you? You there? Where should people go? Should they build a big ladder and go up? But heaven has been blocked by the drones and F-16s and the smoke of death. My son asks me whether, when we return to Gaza, I could get him a puppy. I say, I promise, if we can find any. I ask my son if he wishes to become a pilot when he grows up. He says he won't wish to drop bombs on people and houses. When we die, our souls leave our bodies, take with them everything they loved in our bedrooms, the perfume bottles, the makeup, the necklaces, and the pens. In Gaza, our bodies and rooms get crushed. Nothing remains for the soul. Even our souls, they get stuck under the rubble for weeks.
Epigram, a short and usually pointed poem.
Cold, cruel, cash cropping, crucifying, depraved. King Leopold slaughtered and enslaved the people of a country he named the Congo Free State. Free to die, despair, and decay. For Leopold's sake. He
paid priests and press to write about his missionaries, emissaries touting the clout of a piece of paper called the Congo Free Charter, signed in 1884 by the USA for starters. Followed by 13 European states meeting in Berlin, vowing to save the lost souls of the Congo from mortal sin, and to protect each other's rights to usurp freely, and to share the loot more or less equally. But Leopold was a king wearing a cross round his neck. He believed everyone should genuflect to his divine right to rob, rape, and rule. He took pleasure in playing a Yankee as his personal fool. The flag of the Congo Free State, did I say free, was a pirate flag. Its fruitful domain, King Leopold's private swag. Millions of men, women, and children named his slaves. And by lash, fire, starvation, and mutilation, taught to behave. Rubber, ivory, exotica, European American erotica, placed as a tax on the backs of the Africans by Leopold and his gang of hooligans. Leopold, the greatest benefactor of art in his time. His castle, a chapel, and brothel combined. Ready to receive gifts at any time. And to practice cruelty upon the queen and her kind. Commander of a legion of men, each with a gun, each man accounting for each bullet with one right hand of the African man or woman he shot. The tax to be paid, whether they were dead or not. An ocean of blood and tears. 20 million Africans in 20 years. Revolving each and every rubber tire, funding the art so admired, and given the chance to kiss the cross when they fell, so they wouldn't miss heaven after living in hell.
Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network. You can visit our archives at listenandbeheard.net, where you are also welcome to contribute to our efforts in creating this entirely commercial-free podcast, and radio show.
Hey, ¿cómo estamos, everyone? This is Jay Rodriguez, also known as Hernán Ramiro Rodriguez Sierra. Hope you're enjoying our summer remix for the Listen and Be Heard Hour, readers and writers. Back to it.
There are island people in this mountain town. They weave through currents and curves, navigating every twist of road and thought. Island people from Micronesia, creating islands with their hands, islands of generosity in a womb of humility, silence, sharing roast pig and rice and taro and the gift of their music carved into the mountains. The island people traveled the twisting path of the mountains, navigating as their ancestors did across seas, leaving behind songs and poetry in the skin of trees and the hues of 10,000 jagged flowers. Songs and poetry that Helene could not silence. One of the island people is a man with an island smile carved into the mountains of Western North Carolina, a man whose family was in need of water after the hurricane, a man I had worked with in the passing breath of a season. I went to his home with several jugs of water. He opened the door. I see his face for the first time again. A face whose eyes carry words of water across islands and time zones and barriers into the mountains. Eyes that carry water I thirst for.
Acrostic. A poem in which the initial letters of the lines spell a name or a title.
Listen to Sound System Culture. Support the Listen and Be Heard Network and Sound System Culture, that Inc., right? So that we can keep on bringing you this beautiful music and these beautiful statements and giving our people in our community all around the world a voice that they may heal and grow and inspire. All right, now, all the best. Peace out.
Being able to have something to say comes from being a good listener, you know, because you have to learn, you have to listen and gain knowledge, and then you can be a little bit more expressive with a little bit more intelligence than what you say. Being able to have something to say comes from being a good listener, you know, because you have to learn, you have to listen and gain knowledge, and then you can be a little bit more expressive with a little bit more intelligence than what you say. Being able to have something to say comes from being a good listener, you know, because you have to learn, you have to listen and gain knowledge than what you say. Being able to have something to say comes from being a good listener, you know, because you have to learn, you have to listen and gain knowledge. Then you can be a little bit more expressive with a little bit more intelligence than what you say. Being able to have something to say comes from being a good listener. You know, because you have to learn, you have to listen and gain knowledge. And then you can be a little bit more expressive with having a little bit more intelligence. Be there.
the time goes by so quickly here in the Audio Garden, my friends. And I've so enjoyed that time here with you. One of the pleasures of gardening, audio gardening, is listening to your garden grow. If I went back, or if you went back to listen to the pilot episode almost 3 years ago now of this show, which you could do, we have all of our archives at listenandbeheard.net, you would hear me by myself making a show, fooling around with the concept of what it is and how it should grow. And my idea at the time was to reintroduce myself to the literary community from which I felt a bit estranged, and to be a good member of that community and serve its needs, which is for authors to be able to have a forum, a platform to talk about their work, their new books, their craft, and for us to engage with each other and to embody the network that we are. Because we are the network, and Listen and Be Heard network is nothing but a growing group of people who communicate and help each other out too, nurture each other, water each other, shine light on each other, and admire us when we flower and harvest our fruits when they're ripe to be enjoyed after much practice and deliberation. And this show has grown and blossomed in ways that I could never really have imagined when I first began. And yet it's growing into what I envisioned it to be, which is for me to be part of a family and to, you know, do my part in that family. And my part seems to be to bring people together and engage them in conversation and have conversations that lead to action and creation and even beauty and enjoyment. And I hope that you feel the same way about Listen and Be Heard and would welcome your participation as another creator, inventor, listener who also needs to be heard. And there are various ways that you could become involved in this entirely commercial-free hour, either by contributing segments or contributing finances or just leaving a comment and letting us know if we're making a difference in your life, if you like to come back from week to week.
Thanks as always to Davine Dial at WPVM Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, for introducing Listen and Be Heard to the broadcast airwaves. KCEI in Taos, New Mexico. KEPJ in San Antonio, Texas. KHOI in Ames, Iowa. And KFOI in Red Bluff, California. And other stations that are part of the Pacifica Affiliate Network for cultivating the audio garden in your communities. And our own Listen and Be Heard Network, host of WLBH.org. Please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter and at our Listen and Be Heard YouTube channel, where you will find unedited video interviews of our featured guests. My name is Martha Senator, and I want to thank you for listening and giving me the opportunity to be heard.
Thanks to Martha Senator, our executive producer, and our new nonprofit, Sound System Culture. We really thank you for your support. Please tell your friends. This is the only place you're going to hear this music, this radio art, the way that radio podcasts should be felt and experienced in our communities. All right? Check it out.
Take out your pants.